Hi, I'm Dana. Can we please stand for the reading this morning? I'm going to read Genesis 45, 1 verse 15. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him, because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." When they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one who you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you and remnant on earth to save lives by a great deliverance. So then, it will not be you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, 'This is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you, your children and your grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have. I will provide you there, because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute. You can see for yourselves, and so can my brother Benjamin, that it is me really who I am speaking to you. Tell my father about all the honor accorded to me in Egypt and about everything you have seen, and bring my father down here quickly.' Then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept, and Benjamin embraced him weeping. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. Afterwards, his brothers talked with him."
Thanks, Dana, for reading. Feel free to take a seat. Well, thank you to everyone that has contributed so far. I am loving this morning. Are you guys? How awesome it is to have our young people leading us in the rhythms of our worship. We're going to continue in that fashion this morning. Two of our youth will later be sharing their own reflections on that they've already prepared on our passage throughout the sermon slot, so I'm really looking forward to that. Our passage for today opens with an overflow of emotion. I'm quite familiar with overflows of emotion at the moment. Jono and I recently bought a manual car, partly so that I can learn that skill, because my family didn't have one when I was learning to drive. I'm often being asked at the moment how I'm going with that learning process, so I may as well update you all at once. It's quite tricky to get my feet to do what my brain knows they need to do. That's a metaphor, if there ever was one, but that's a side note we don't have time for. We have made some progress on the driving front now, but the first couple times we went out for a drive, it was very difficult for me to keep my overwhelm under control. You know when emotion just sort of sits in your chest for a long time, but you can't, like, let it out yet? Especially the first time we went driving, I tried not to cry for a long time, not because Jono's a bad teacher, he's very patient, not because I'm uncomfortable crying in front of him either, but because I knew that once I started crying out of my frustration and overwhelm, I would need time to ride the whole wave of all those emotions. But I didn't want to stop and give myself that time in case I did get the hang of whatever I was practicing. I think it was just starting driving. But eventually, we called it a day, and all that emotion that was sitting in my chest and in the back of my eyeballs just came rushing out. I can't remember which came first. But anyway, overflows of emotion. Let's recap and remember how we got to this point in the story. If you've got your Bibles, feel free to open them up to Genesis 45, and we'll just backtrack a little bit. So since the famines have arrived and Jacob's sons have come to Egypt searching for food, Joseph has been setting his brothers up in all sorts of ways to test where their hearts were at. Had they changed? He basically backed them into a corner where, in order to get more food to survive, they had to bring back Benjamin, Jacob's youngest and only remaining son, from his favorite wife, Rachel, Joseph's full brother. His brothers essentially put their own lives on the line, promising to bring Benjamin back safely to Jacob, because Jacob was not interested in this idea. Then Joseph, when they bring Benjamin back, Joseph sets Benjamin up for stealing his silver cup and creates a situation where they would have to leave Benjamin behind as a slave, which was not the plan at all. Judah, one of the architects of Joseph's whole slavery into Egypt, pours out a plea in chapter 44. "Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come on my father." And here is where we are in chapter 45. After hearing this selfless declaration from Judah, here's the overflow of emotion. "Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, 'Have everyone leave my presence.' So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's household heard about it." It is a little funny to me that even though he orders everyone to leave, everyone can still very much hear him. But after the last few chapters, where Joseph is only just keeping it together in front of his family, in chapter 42, he turns away and weeps when he overhears their anxious discussion about him. And in chapter 43, he runs out and weeps in his private room at the sight of his little brother Benjamin. After all his plots and plans to see what was really going on inside their hearts, it's like the tension that's building, if he was like me, in his chest and in his eyeballs, just like snaps. The floodgates are opened. He can't take it any longer. He cries out, "I'm Joseph. Is my father still living?" Much like Judah, Joseph's first concern is the welfare of his dear old dad. The brothers need some time to process this, though, and I don't blame them. There are kind of two aspects to this. First, after 22 years, I think we calculated, and I'm 22 for context, the brother they assumed was as good as dead, and the reason for Jacob's despair all these years, the guilt that has been eating them alive, was alive and right in front of them. How shocking and mind-bending would that be? And second, this guy they've been buying food from all this time, who they would already have been deeply afraid of, who is basically the most powerful man in Egypt, is their brother Joseph, who they wronged in a magnificently huge way. Their lives have been in his hands this whole time, and now they're suddenly aware that this incredibly powerful person not only knows their secret, but was the victim himself. Can you imagine the sinking feeling and the absolute paralyzing terror? They're totally at his mercy here. But Joseph says to them, "Come close to me." We're now going to hear from Luke as he reflects on what amazes him about Joseph's response to his brothers. Come on, Luke.
Hello, everyone. I'm reflecting on Joseph's reconciliation with his brothers. When Joseph's brothers came to Egypt for food, Joseph didn't reveal himself right away because he wanted to see if they had changed since they threw him in the well. He then reveals himself and frames Benjamin for theft, creating a scenario where his brothers must choose between self-preservation and loyalty. Judah, who had suggested selling Joseph years earlier, now offers himself as a slave in Benjamin's place, demonstrating his deep change of heart. Rather than demanding revenge or making them his slaves, instead of those two options, Joseph chose forgiveness and offered love. Joseph didn't keep Benjamin or make his brothers slaves because he recognized that God's plan was bigger than his pain. He chose to show the same grace God shows us, teaching us that true strength lies in forgiveness and love. Just like Joseph, we can forgive and bring healing to our relationships. Thank you all for listening.
How good. Thanks, Luke. Luke wrote that himself, by the way. I'm not just telling people what to say. Right, so as Luke spoke about so well, in a human way of thinking, Joseph could very easily have punished his brothers for what their treatment of him brought to his life. But instead, when he sees his brothers, and particularly Judah's, repentance and changed hearts, he instead chose to extend forgiveness and love. Joseph brings them close, physically and metaphorically, broaching the gap and seeking relationship. He offers grace and chooses to reconcile. Can't have been an easy choice. And this reconciliation, we know, impacts not just the individual relationships between Joseph and each of his brothers, but transforms this whole family, which ends up being a huge deal in this big story of the nation of Israel. Later on, we're going to read about that final moment where Joseph is reconciled to his father. But for now, I'm going to hand over to Luke, a different Luke this time. he's going to share some thoughts about what Joseph's life teaches us about God's divine purpose and plan. Coming up.
Divine purpose. The story of Joseph is filled with divine purpose. Wherever he goes, whatever he does, the Lord was with Joseph and made him successful in all that he did. When I was driving home with my dad, we were talking about Joseph's story. And I noticed that Joseph was alone. Joseph couldn't speak English, he didn't understand their culture, and he was surrounded by idols. But he didn't leave God. Would you be as faithful? Would you have the courage to follow God? But Joseph was faithful to God, and God was faithful to Joseph. Because Joseph had to become a servant, Joseph understood how to become a servant to a master. Then he went to prison, where he was placed in the position to interpret the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker. Maybe this is where he learned to listen to God's quiet words. This could be why he could see God's fingerprints on his life. Through the trials and hardships, he sees that God raises him up to become one of the most powerful men in Egypt. Joseph saw how God changed his brothers and made them repent and regret their decisions. And when Judah takes Benjamin from his father, he promised that he'll bring him back. He's willing to give up his life to keep up the promise. Now, isn't it interesting that Jesus came from the line of Judah, and he was willing to give up his life to fulfill the promise, the covenant? Was it just all divine purpose?
Awesome. Thanks, Luke. I love that fingerprint image that he used. Joseph has, at some point, looked back and noticed that God has been with him the whole time and working through his circumstances. Joseph's gift with dreams previously used to divide his family and cause pain, but it seems that God has taught him to use that gift to point people to God, not to himself. And God uses where Joseph is, and uses this gift to shape the future of the whole nation. This section is so interesting to me because not only do we see further proof that God has been in and amongst everything that has happened to Joseph, we can see that Joseph can see it too. In verse 5, Joseph reassures his brothers and tells them not to be upset or angry with themselves for what they did. That's a very gracious and loving thing to say, first off. But why? Because it was to save lives that God sent me, Joseph, ahead of them. There's a lot of this sent language, three times in fact. Joseph recognizes that God has worked through all the pretty terrible things that have happened to him for the good of not only him and his family, but the whole of Egypt. It is a tricky theological question. Did God deliberately send Joseph through all of that? Did the end justify the means? Or did God take a terrible thing and find a way to redeem it? How do we read this? Interestingly, I read in my prep that the term used for this sending language is often used when dispatching someone on a mission, like when God sends out his prophets. It does seem like, at least from Joseph's perspective, God put Joseph where he was on purpose. He says in verse 5, "It was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you." And in verse 7, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. In verse 8, so then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh. We see here that God didn't just save Joseph from his circumstances, but Joseph's circumstances were how God saved his whole family and the whole area. God placed Joseph in a position of power and authority, an advisor to Pharaoh, which enables Joseph to bring his family into a place of abundance and provision. What an incredible thing for Joseph to teach his brothers. Joseph has chosen to trust God and God's purposes so completely that not only does he seem to hold no resentment towards his brothers, or even towards God somehow, he's ultimately able to see his life in the context of the bigger picture of God's plan, both for his people and the whole area. We see this concept over and over again throughout the story of Joseph, with the lower story that Matt referred to last week, the basic, in the thick of it, human perspective, contrasting with the upper story, the big picture, the God's eye view, big arc. And Joseph is walking his brothers through this perspective. But that said, he's not disregarding what they did. In verse 4, he identifies himself as the one you sold into Egypt. You sold me, but God sent me. Lower story, upper story. You sold me, but God sent me. Both are in tension here, somehow. Somehow, God's purposes unfold through the brothers' jealousy and hatred. Their guilt is real. They did something wrong. But there was a bigger thing going on, somehow. Let's jump through the rest of the story from verse 16, where Pharaoh himself enables the family reunion, which is quite amazing. Joseph instructs his brothers to go and bring the whole whānau over. Joseph was pretty well set up in Egypt by this point, and he wants to set his family up in these tough times too. Even Pharaoh loved the idea, so they load up the brothers with food and donkeys and fine things to take back to Jacob. The sad days, the hungry days, the days of mourning are over. Here comes the abundance, a united family, provision, blessing. And how amazing is it that Pharaoh is so on board with this? This shows us how integral Joseph was to the Egyptian courts, how highly esteemed and respected he was. It's more proof of God's work. So Joseph sends them on their way, reminding them to be unified again. He says, don't quarrel on the way, which has been the subject of some scholarly confusion. But basically, it seems, don't get distracted by whatever dynamics are between you. Don't dilly-dally, just go and get Dad. They make the trek and arrive home with quite the parade and quite the news. Joseph is alive. In fact, he's the ruler of all Egypt. It takes Jacob some convincing, and fair enough too. But as he sees everything that has arrived with his sons and hears the stories, he believes what they tell him, and he agrees to migrate the family over to Egypt. He gets to see Joseph before he dies. I'm going to get Lewis to come and read one final section of our passage before we start to bring this plane down to land.
Hello, this is from Genesis 46. So Israel set out with all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, Jacob, Jacob. Here I am, he replied. I am the God of your father, he said. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. Then Jacob left Beersheba, and Israel's sons took their father Jacob and their children and their wives in the cart that Pharaoh had sent to transport them. So Jacob and all of his offspring went to Egypt, taking with them their livestock and their possessions they had acquired in Canaan. Jacob brought with them to Egypt his sons and grandsons and his daughters and granddaughters, all of his offspring.
Awesome. Thanks, Lewis. So, on his travels to Egypt, Jacob pauses and seeks God. It's not the first time he's done this, actually. The first time he leaves his homeland, in chapter 28, he stops and has this vision of the stairs. It's kind of famous. And God promises to be with him as he goes. A similar thing happens here. God confirms this decision to go down to Egypt. This is indeed their deliverance. And God promises to be with him. God has been with Joseph this whole time. And now God promises to be with Jacob and his family. And he also promises to make his family into a great nation there and to bring them back from Egypt. So Jacob takes the whole tribe. Has anyone here moved cities or even countries with a family in tow? I'd hazard a guess, it's not something you want to repeat too many times. No? No. Here's a very rough family tree that I've drawn up to help us get a grasp of the passenger list. There's 70 sons, grandsons, and great-grandsons, not to mention all the girls. They aren't even counted on here. Already we're getting glimpses of these promises to Abraham being fulfilled. Abundance, descendants, moving in and blessing the other nations. It's all starting to get underway. 70 people. 70 boys, actually. It's a lot of people. I won't go into the details of these many descendants and what their significance is, although you can look into it. But Luke gave us a little sneak preview. The son who so hated Joseph, Judah, ended up being the family line of the tribe of Judah, from which a certain Jesus of Nazareth came. And the other sons also became the tribes of Israel, which is why all these names might be sounding kind of familiar. In verse 28 to 30, then we have the final reconciliation, the final piece of this family reunion puzzle. Joseph meets his father in the place he's prepared for them to live and immediately throws his arms around him and weeps for a long time. We started with an overflow of emotion and we're finishing one with this morning. I wonder what part of these two chapters, we've covered a lot of ground, stick out to you. Like Luke, the first Luke, Doherty, are you amazed at the love and forgiveness that Joseph offers his brothers when he sees their selflessness? Are you challenged by the lack of bitterness and the lack of holding them at arm's length? How warm and deep and raw Joseph's welcome was. He wanted to reconnect. Is that a challenge? Or are you reflecting, like Luke Stammond, on Joseph's incredible wisdom in understanding God's purposes throughout his life? Are you marveling at the perspective he holds, that while his brothers were still guilty, it was God who put him where he was? Are you challenged by the way Joseph sees everything that has happened to him and everything that he has endured as a mission that God has sent him on? As something bigger that God was doing beyond them all. And then he trusts God so completely that it seems there's no bitterness there. What challenges you this morning? What inspires you? At Youth Group, we love using post-it notes as a way to respond to what we've heard or read. We'll often pass them out and get our youth to write a couple of sentences that capture how God's story intersects with their own story and what they're going to think about and do in response. And then sometimes we stick them on the wall as a way of owning it. A few of our youth are going to hand out some post-its and pens for you to have a chance to reflect. There will be a couple of questions on the screen, which I'm going to invite the Lukes to come up and read. So we'll take a few minutes in the stillness to reflect. Feel free to turn to someone near you, spend some time in prayer together. And then the band will lead us in sung worship again to commit it all to Jesus. So, here are our reflection questions.
How does Joseph's posture of forgiveness and desire to rebuild relationship in light of his story challenge or inspire you?
How does Joseph's complete trust in God's plan challenge or inspire you?